We begin with Troy itself. Archaeologists have proved there was an imposing citadel exactly where Homer's tale says, at the mouth of the Dardanelles. A royal fortress with well-built gates and towers. Finds of pottery show it had trading relations with Agamemnon's Mycenae. But that doesn't prove Homer's tale is true. Is there anything in Homer's language which can tell us whether his story actually goes back 500 years before his day?
We'll start with a text, the one we saw coming hot foot off the press. This is translated from modern printed texts, and they go back to this great book, the original printed edition of Homer's Iliad, done in Florence in 1488, and what a wonderful piece of bookmaking it is. The Greek scholars who constructed this text used medieval manuscripts. Behind those medieval manuscripts lie Roman papyruses, preserved in fragments in the sands of Egypt. But this written tradition only takes us back about as far as 550 BC. In other words, 700 years after the Trojan War, and perhaps 200 years after Homer's own time. There's a problem then. Did Homer, whoever he was, actually write this poem? Well, the opinion in Roman times was that he didn't, and that the poem had been preserved orally for a long time before it was committed to writing. And if that's the case, then this text that we know as a book is actually the record of an oral performance about 2.5 millennia old. But the question was how to prove it. The text of Homer contains features that aren't really explicable if it was written down. And chief among them are the repetitions. The text is full of repeated lines, phrases, and even whole chunks. And among them, one special feature, and that is what we call the formulas, the descriptive tags or epithets applied to the heroes. Swift-running Achilles, Hector of the bright helmet. We can just make out one of them here on the papyrus. Dios Odysseus, a brilliant Odysseus, and just higher up here, great-hearted Odysseus. An even more interesting group of epithets is applied by Homer to Troy itself, which he calls well-built, finely towered, beetling, windy, and bearing many horses. Now, has Homer made up those descriptions, or do they go back long before his time, perhaps even to before the end of the Bronze Age? To answer that, we need to know more about Homer himself.
Homer's identity, however, is still a great mystery. Modern experts cannot agree whether he was one man, two, several, or even a woman. The ancients believed that he was one man, whose name mysteriously means the hostage. They thought he was blind, that he had lived just before 700 BC in Ionia, what is now the western coast of Turkey. Here, Greeks had migrated in the Dark Age which followed the collapse of Mycenaean civilization. It was a new world which would see the birth of Western science, medicine, and philosophy. If Homer existed, he worked as a professional singer, a bard, in royal and noble courts on these coasts. His was an oral society on the verge of literacy. The ancients assumed he had written his text. Modern scholars think that the Iliad was committed to writing in the century or so after his death, but that Homer himself was working in a fully oral tradition. But what does that mean? Kilgallaghan, on the Atlantic coast of County Mayo, Ireland. Here the oral tradition has lingered on. The last performer of epics the length of the Iliad died only 40 years ago, but there are still storytellers reciting tales of heroic deeds in heroic language. They resemble Homer in their style of speech, especially in the formulas or runs, whose repeat passages, like Homer's, are highly formalized. The storyteller we have come to hear cannot read or write and speaks only Gaelic. His name is John Henry. For the last 10 summers, John's repertoire has been recorded by Dr. Seamus O'Cahoyne of University College Dublin. John has not yet run out of stories.
You couldn't just break it down for me in translation, could you, line by line? Is that a difficult thing for a storyteller to do?
It's very hard to do it, and it's very hard to translate because there's a lot of... A lot of the words don't mean anything in particular. It's alliterative. It's fully within the ancient tradition of runs.
But just to catch the flavour of it.
Well, Hoigse the good shawls to Boko Jaha Bako Jaha. They raised their sails. Boko Jaha Bako Jaha. Perhaps billowing or bellying sails or something like that. Snaichi Fada Gabarna Gran. Long threads or ropes to the tops of the masts. Get the Vienation, John. 200 rowing. 12 on the steering. Sand coming up and foam going down. Splish, splash, lopadonagus, lopadon. Whales and seals swimming along behind. In English you might say the end result is that they set sail and they got there. But of course it's much more complicated than that.
And what was it that impelled him to learn those stories?
Well, John's the man to answer that question. Take it to Yirin the Skeltish Owl. Well, John says that this was the attitude of mind he always had. He was greedy for stories. And of course, he got them.
Now, no one in Kilgallaghan is learning the tales from John to pass them on as he did. His only audience is the tape recorder, a sure sign that the tradition is nearing its end. Now we have no need of such guardians of the tradition. Today we recall our lists from a computer terminal, not from the memory of a bard. The idea of memorizing 200 names on an international flight would seem absurd to us. To deliver a poem the length of the Iliad is simply inconceivable. But it is still possible to see such a performance. To find it, we must travel far afield.